Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet, I climbed out up inside. The choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart. Although I was a
well, good morning. Hey, how are you? Good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're here talking about your cars. The first hour is going to be really special, because we are going to talk about tires and all the other stuff, and you'll think, oh, tires is a boring subject, but I promise you it won't be. If you want to join us about tires, if you want to talk about tires, we're going to talk about a variety of things. We're going to talk about nitrogen, inflation, heat, what people do when a tire blows that causes them significant personal injury, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and what are some of the symptoms before a tire may blow that you might want to know. We're going to talk about a lot of that kind of stuff. This portion of Under the Hood, though, is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission is who you should call. They have many years of experience, and they're not going to say that they have to take your transmission apart for $300 or $400 or $500 or $600 or $700 before they can give you an estimate. Folks, When you don't do that, it's because you're experienced. They can look at your transmission, and they know what the low and the high is going to be. You'll know that before they take your transmission apart. However, they tell me that not even half of the transmission problems that come in are actually related to a complete overhaul. So that's good news. Quality Transmission is located in Tempe. They're north of University on McClintock, and no matter where you live, they're worth the drive. That's Quality Transmission in Tempe. John Dawes is with me right now, and John is here. And I just wanted to know, your probation officer called me, and
yeah, right.
And he said I can only have you for an hour. John and I have worked. We're both experts that work with insurance companies, with police departments, public defender's office. In civil litigation, sometimes we're on the plaintiff's side, sometimes we're on the defense side. John does tires, and really does tires well. I do the mechanical side, and John does the tires. So I want to start off with, John's a consultant for insurance companies, consultant for attorneys, personal injury attorneys.
Yeah.
And what's the typical question you get that they ask you?
Well, the typical question is, why did this tire fail?
Okay. And you, what is it that you need to do to answer that question? What do you typically do first?
Well, the first thing is try to figure out what happened in the accident to get an understanding about whether the tire failed on the road or failed as part of the accident or something like that. And then what I do is what's called an inspection, but basically it's put my hands and eyes on the tire, look at all the pieces, try to put it back together like a big 3D jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
to understand how the tire came apart.
And where did you get this history? Who did you work for?
Okay, I worked for Michelin for 20 years.
Okay.
And then another 10 years or another 4 years for a company called Exponent, where I basically looked at accident reconstruction and crash testing and things like that. But most of my tire experience comes from Michelin.
Now, when you were at Michelin, where did you start and where did you end up?
Okay.
I want to hear that you were in the garage running the forklift and then you got your degree. That's what I want to hear, but you tell me the truth.
No, I was I started out at Michelin. Actually, I spent about 2 years in France, and the first couple of weeks I was there, they had me on a tire machine building tires.
Oh.
Which was kind of an experience. Most people don't know that tires are basically handmade. They're assembled by an operator who puts all the pieces together before they go into a curing press. So I spent some time in France in training, and then I was basically responsible for making equipment to manufacture tires
for
the plants in the U.S. and Canada. From there, I went into quality control for a couple of years, and so, you know, did a lot of tire measurement, you know, uniformity, rolling resistance, all those kinds of things that are
important.
Measured on tires.
Yeah.
And then I spent a couple of years as a tire designer.
Okay.
And then I went back into process engineering for the last 4 years I was there.
Now, you were part of the team that did the Firestone 721?
Different company.
I'm just kidding. can you hang your hat on anything that we'll recognize on the machine?
I don't know. Those aficionados of electric vehicles might recognize the original General Motors Impact, the EV1.
Uh-huh.
The tires on that car were my tires.
Okay.
They were... high-pressure, low-rolling-resistance tires with sealant in them because the car didn't carry a spare tire.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what kind of sealant did you put in there? Is it something that we can buy off the shelf today?
No, this was a special goo that was developed by B.F. Goodrich and was applied to the inside of the tire after the tire's made.
Okay, now did it stay there or did it goo up at the bottom overnight where it stayed on the bottom of the tire?
Oh, it stayed there. This stuff was so thick.
Uh-huh.
And sticky.
Snotty. You almost said snotty.
No. It doesn't run at all. You lay it in the tire, and it just stays there.
Now, how big of it? Could a typical pencil going through the tread? No problem. How big? I mean, a penny, a dime, a nickel, a quarter? How big of a hole?
Well, you test it with nails.
Okay.
Right. So I don't really know how big an object could penetrate the tire.
Okay.
Obviously, at some point, you start to distort the steel cord, and you make the tire not usable. But,
okay. All right. So, real quick now, I want to talk about from the inside to the outside. I'm going to spot you the inner liner.
Okay.
Now, the inner liner is just the solid, what appears to be a solid piece of rubber on the inside of the tire that's very smooth.
Well, not necessarily. Most inner liners have some kind of texture. They look like what's called toad skin.
Okay.
They're kind of a rough stuff on the...
You're right.
Yeah.
And we have to buff the toad skin to put the patch on it.
There you go.
Okay.
When you're doing a repair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So, a tire basically is made up of layers, and the inner liner serves as the inner tube for a tubeless tire.
Okay.
And then you have what's called body ply, which is comprised of polyester cords that basically look like kite string in rubber, and they go from bead to bead.
Okay, that's side to side as opposed to longitudinally around the tire.
Right.
Okay.
So they wrap around the bead
at
each flange of the rim, and they hold the air pressure.
Okay, and the bead is a series of steel wires together that make a circle that gives the tire the stability on the wheel.
Right.
Okay, how many wires are in there?
In a Michelin tire, there's only one. It wraps around a whole bunch of times.
Okay.
Some people use multiple strands.
Okay.
So they maybe have five strands that are wrapped around six times.
Okay.
If
it's one, if it's one wire that's wrapped around in a Michelin, how many times is the wrap? Five, six?
Well, there typically be six or seven.
Okay.
Okay. On a heavy truck tire, there may be 30 or 40 wraps.
Oh, you're kidding.
Uh-huh.
So for somebody to break a bead on a tire machine, they worked real hard at it.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And folks, the bead, it's like a long piece of garden hose that has these steel wires in it, five or six on a passenger car or whatever it is. And when you break the bead, then instead of the garden hose being really difficult to bend in a U, it just bends and right there and crimps.
Right.
And you know that the bead's gone.
Yeah.
And you know you just bought a new tire.
Exactly.
Okay. So you got the inner liner, then you've got these plies that run bead to bead. They're usually polyester. Now, they used to be nylon, and that caused a flat spot in the tire.
Well, they used to be nylon or rayon. Rayon's kind of bad for the environment, so you don't see that in the U.S.
Okay.
And nylon's really bad for flat spotting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after we get done with the polyester side to side, then what's next?
Well, then you have the sidewalls, the sidewall rubber that protects those cords from curbs and things like that.
Is there white underneath every sidewall?
No. If it's a purely black wall tire, both sides, there will not be any white under.
But isn't that how they make white walls? They put white and then they groove it out with the machine?
Yeah. When you make a white wall tire, you put a layer of white rubber underneath the sidewall, and then it's got a profile from the mold, and then you grind it off to expose the white rubber.
Okay.
That's how you get a nice clean line.
All right.
Okay.
I thought maybe everything had that white in there, and I wondered why. When you kissed a curb, my wife, she would have white walls whether I wanted her to have them or not.
Well, the white rubber is really expensive.
Okay.
It's got titanium dioxide in it. That's the white.
Okay.
So
you don't put it there
if you don't need it.
All right. Okay. So then we've got the sidewalls. Now what do we put on next?
Well, on the next part would be the tread pieces, okay. or it would be the steel belt reinforcements.
Okay.
The steel belt reinforcements are typically in a passenger tire, two layers, going at different angles.
Okay.
So you have one layer, say, at if you're looking in the line of the tire, one layer at minus 30 degrees and
all right,
another
that's,
layer at
we're
going
to do it for from 2 to 8, on the clock. 2
oh,
o'clock
okay.
to 8 o'clock?
Yeah, 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and then
okay.
the other going from, say, 10 to 4.
4. Okay.
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 Like that.
We're in radio. They can't see our hands.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So, okay. Now, this...
They can't see how I'm dressed?
No. No.
Okay, geez.
I wish you would have shaved. But so we have this... Now, my perception of this steel belt is you take a big pan of liquefied black rubber, and you put a screen from a screen door within that rubber, and you position it perfectly in the middle of that rubber, and then you let it cool. How close am I?
No, you're way off.
But physically, from a visual standpoint,
if you consider that the wires are triangular instead of square like a screen door,
okay.
there's triangles in
okay.
there.
Okay. All right.
You're pretty close. That's what it would look like if you cut the tire apart.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And they go from the one edge of the tread to the other edge of the tread.
Okay.
So they reinforce the tread area.
Where are they the strongest? Are they on the shoulder of the tire where the sidewall meets the tread, or is the more steel on the tread portion of the tire?
Well, the tread's it's under the tread portion of the tire.
Okay.
So out near the edge of the tread, there's going to be the inner or the first steel belt that's put down is going to be wider than the second one.
Okay.
And that gives you some strain relief.
Okay.
And it's better for the stress in the tire.
Okay, they didn't used to do that because when steel belted radials first came out, when you ran them inflated and properly, the steel would stick through the tread on the side of the tire. And that's before you guys wrapped this steel down, right?
Yeah.
Is that
well,
how it worked?
No, the vast majority of tires are... basically, only have two belts.
Okay.
They don't have a nylon overlap.
How about trucks?
Trucks have maybe four steel belts.
Okay. Okay. Even the big 22.5s.
Exactly.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about patching or plugging a tire.
Okay.
And you can tell us what you think we've done wrong as an industry, the repair industry. I'll represent the repair industry. And this is where we're going to have an argument. Because, and actually, we're not going to really, but it's really interesting because we're going to have to really be on our toes because we have to describe this without the benefit of a picture.
Oh, my.
And so we're going to start with a nail going through the tire, okay? And then we're going to describe the damage, and then we're going to describe why this repair won't work or this repair will work and all that other kind
okay.
of stuff, all right? When we come back, we're going to do that. If you have a tire question you want to ask the best expert I've ever met, 602-508-0960.
Raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. My guest is John Dawes. John is a tire expert, and he knows how to build them. He knows how they fail, and he is one of those experts that doesn't tell. Well, he's like me. We don't tell them what they want to hear. We tell them what the truth is, and sometimes they don't like that, and they transfer you from a testifying expert to a consulting expert.
There you go.
And that tells everybody that you didn't tell them what they wanted to hear. All righty. Let's take Tom real quick. Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you today?
Good morning. I'm close to tires, but I'm worried about brake dust. How do you keep the brake dust off of the front rims?
There's really no way. It has more. Are you driving a Mercedes by chance?
No, Toyota.
Okay. There's no way. The brake dust is a process of the brake pad you're using. The way to get rid of it is just not use that brand anymore. Now, there's Raybestos and Wagner, Bendix, and then there's 10 or 12 other major brands of brake pads. The softer ones never squeal, but they shed like crazy, and they don't last very long. The harder ones have a tendency to squeal, they don't shed, and they last forever. Those are and everything in between, those are your choices. Now, some guys will use spray wax on their wheels, but they tell me later it doesn't make any difference. The dust will still be there. There's some big metal things that you can slide over your rotors and take your tire and wheel off, put this big metal shield on, and then put your tire back on. However, that disrupts the air across your brakes that's supposed to cool your brakes, and all it does is deflect the dust elsewhere. But it can have a negative effect on the performance of your brakes, especially if, like, you're running from the police or something.
So the best thing to do would just be put on a harder brake pad.
Yeah, just tell them you want a little harder brake pad and something that doesn't shed. Now, here's the deal. Let me ask you a question. If you were a shop owner, would you put pads on that last a long time or a short time?
Well, it depends on whether I want to keep the customer or not.
No, it depends on whether your financial situation is good or not. Our industry is really looking bad right now, and we're going to discuss that in the second hour. But right now, those kinds of decisions are made every day in every city in the United States, and I can assure you that the majority of them are, hey, if I do a soft pad and dirty up their wheels, I'll get more business out of this customer. So that, but you have the option. You have the option of, say, give me the menu and tell me what the soft, the middle, and the high is, and you can do that yourself, okay?
Well, I noticed you had Ray Bestis on your website.
And that is one of the pads. We sell all of them. We sell Wagner. We sell Bendix. We sell Ray Bestis. We also sell a variety of Akebono, which is the import line, and we really like that. And dust is not a concern on the Akebono line.
They don't dust off?
No, not none of our customers have complained about it. Now, you got to know, too, Joe, that if you can take a tissue on any car, and you're going to get some brake dust off the wheel. But if talking about turning the wheel black, That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm concerned about, because when I just took them off, they were just covered.
Yeah. Yeah, it's water-soluble, so you just wash it off. But, like I said, you can just change the brand of the pads next time, okay?
Oh, okay, be down to see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. And so we get a nail. The nail is, we're going to make it easy for you, because I don't want to tax your head today. It's going straight through the tread. And it goes through the tread. It goes through those two layers of screen door with triangular holes.
Yep.
Then it goes through the kite string polyester, and then it goes through the inner liner.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I'm going to plug that tire.
Okay.
And I'm going to take the plug, and I'm going to take this piece of rope, and I'm going to dip it in glue.
No. Please don't do that.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
All right.
This is what I want to do.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. And then I'm going to shove it through the hole, and it's going to be a U-shaped.
Right.
And then on the outside, I'm just going to clip it off. Why can't I do that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why you don't want to do that. The first and most important one is if that nail in any way, shape, or form damaged something on that inner liner somewhere else. And we've both seen cases where that can occur.
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty straightforward. But the reason for taking the tire off the wheel is to examine the inside and make sure there's no other damage. If you run the tire low enough while you have this nail in your tire, then you run the risk of permanently damaging the inner liner or some other part of the working structure of the tire. So you don't want to do that. You always want to have the tire removed from the wheel and examined on the inside to make sure there's no other damage. And that kind of lets out any kind of repair that you would just do from the outside.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that kind of repair as a temporary repair to get you to somewhere.
Okay.
You know, if you're out in the boonies and you need to get somewhere, that's a great kind of fix to get to the gas station.
Okay.
The next kind of repair is just a rubber plug.
Wait a minute. I'm going to stick on the regular old-fashioned plug from the 50s and 60s that my dad and everybody did.
Well, again, in those days, we were talking about bias tires and bias belted tires. They don't have steel cord in them.
Okay.
That kind of repair works pretty well on a bias tire.
Well, what percentage of the market do they make up, Mr. Big Shot, Mr. Tire?
Probably a couple of percent. Almost everything out there today is a steel-belted
tire. I haven't seen a bias ply tire in 100 years. Right.
Well, you see them in trailers.
Yeah.
Motorcycles, things like that. Okay. So the next kind of repair that you'd want to do if you remove the tire from the wheel is a patch.
Okay.
You just put a patch, you know, you buff the inner liner, you apply this patch, and that seals the air chamber of the tire.
But it allows water to get in on the other end of the hole and rust that screen door you put in there.
That's exactly right. If you live in a wet climate or you live in places that you run the risk of getting moisture down inside that hole, and those steel cords are high tensile cords, and they rust very, very easily.
Okay.
And so what can happen is you can literally rust away the steel section inside that tire there, and that'll lead to a tread separation.
And a tread separation is an egg on the tread. It's a hump. It's an unusual bump. It looks like a snake that swallowed an egg on the tread portion of the tire. There's a vibration associated with it.
Yeah.
And it there's a physical bump that you can see on the tread portion of the
sometimes.
Tire. Okay.
All right. Generally what you get is a looseness of the tread.
Okay.
And what that will result in as you keep driving it is it will result in a worn section. So it'll actually look like a depression when the tire's sitting there.
Okay.
Now, if you've run over something and broken the tire inside, you'll get a bulge.
Okay.
But most of the time, tread separation shows up as kind of a dish or a worn spot where the tread is shallower.
But that's because I thought the tread protrudes past the outer ring of the tire, and so that's why it shows an accelerated wear.
No. It's because as you roll, that tread is able to slip. It moves back and forth as it goes through the contact patch because it's loose between the two steel belts.
So if I patch it, I still have the water issue.
Right. So what the tire industry recommends is a patch and a plug.
Okay.
And it's a patch on the inside with a rubber plug going through the hole and sealing it.
Okay.
And that is the absolute best kind of patch you can possibly get.
Okay, Mr. Big Shot. Now, we got these layers of tires, and you're going to seal the top and the bottom.
1 minute.
Right?
Right.
You're going to seal the inside for the patch and the top with a plug.
Right.
But air expands when the air gets hot, and we have air that it may be stuck in there, so when the tire gets hot, it expands and pulls the tire apart.
No, that's not going to happen. This plug is a rubber plug, and it goes all the way through from the patch to the surface.
Okay.
So there's really no air. If you properly prepare the hole, there's no air trapped, no air left in that in that hole. It's vulcanized into the rubber products and around the steel cords.
Okay. Now, they've got those that actually apply from the inside, right?
Yes. They make what they call a combination patch, which is a patch with a plug built into it, and the repairman basically puts his instrument through the tire and pulls that plug into place and seals the patch.
It's like an umbrella.
It's like little umbrella.
It looks like just like a little
umbrella. Call them mushroom plugs.
Okay, yeah. We'll be back right after this.
Well, you can get stereo tape and a color TV, get a backseat bar and reclining seats, and just pay once a month like you do your rent. Well, I figured it up, and over a period of time, this $4,000 car of mine cost $14,000.99.
Yes, sir. Well, it must be a Ford. You know what? You just take a chance. Every once in a while, you get into trouble all by yourself. Mark Salem here with John Dawes. John is a tire expert on the manufacturing, the creation, the testing, and he's like that guy that does autopsies on TV, except he does them on tires.
Yeah, for tires.
And and then when he asks me to help him, inevitably it's, can you go down to Interstate 10 at mile marker 215 and walk for 2 miles and pick up tires that look like this? That's always a lot of fun. All right, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located in Mesa. Now, on Main Street and Stapley, just east on the south side of the road. Main Street and Stapley, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Thompson's been in business since 1970. Brian and Thelma are the owners of Thompson's Auto Repair, and there's no finer people than Brian and Thelma. They are absolutely the kindest, the most gentlest, and the most honest people you've ever seen. They're a AAA approved shop. They're an ASC Blue Seal shop. Brian is part of the TechNet Council for CarQuest, and he was named Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. I'm really proud to have Thompson's Auto Repair at Main and Stapley on my best car repair shop list. You can find it at marksalem.com. Okay, so now I've got the tire all fixed up. And I've got this fancy dancy patch, but I'm going to tell you, and you know this already, all my years of fixing tires, I never liked plugs for this reason. Inevitably, you took the tire apart for the next repair. Now, you'd had two holes inside the tire. You'd have the one that the nail made, but they couldn't possibly follow that. And so you have another one that the plug's sticking out of a quarter of an inch away. You got two holes, and they're lucked out because somehow or another, but they never go the path of the nail. You can't because you can't see it. No. That's what it was that drove me away from plugs was just they weren't scientific enough.
And I've seen cases where that hole that's left over, the one the nail made, is the one that actually bleeds air into the tire and causes a bulge and causes the tire to fail. So the real danger, I mean, there's a number of dangers of a plug-only repair from the outside. is okay. that you don't find the hole.
Okay. And I'm going to say, I'm not shy about, I won't even ride in a car if I know it's got a plug. I mean, and I've never plugged tires in my life. We are using the new umbrella where we pull them through and stuff. But they are so dangerous and so unsophisticated. They're from the 50s, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And that technology is so old-fashioned.
Well, they're for tires from that era.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
If you have a bias tire, you know, and you like on your trailer, and you want to make a patch to get you somewhere, it's a good temporary fix. But okay. That's about all it is. Okay.
So from the top of the tread, we've got this one line coming down. The hole comes in about halfway through the tire. Then it splits to the left and to the right. Okay.
Right.
And what you're talking about from a visual point of view is the tire's made up of many layers. The hole that wasn't plugged in the inside of the tire will feed air into those layers and begin to separate those layers with air.
Well,
and
exactly.
As the air gets hot.
It'll begin to try to pull the tire apart or squeeze the tire apart.
Okay.
Very, very dangerous situation.
Now, when does a tire blow up temperature-wise? How hot does the tire have to be before you're in trouble? In a passenger car light truck application.
Well, the temperature of the tire basically is limited by a lot of different things.
The glue.
Airflow and stuff like
okay.
that. There is no glue in
okay.
a tire.
All
okay.
Right.
Those pieces of rubber, those layers, are vulcanized together where the chemistry is basically knit those layers. There
okay.
is no glue.
Okay.
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 So that's the most important thing. But what happens is that as you start to get hotter and hotter in a tire, it starts shedding pieces of rubber. So you'll see chunks of tread come out and things like that. The most extreme kind of temperature thing I can share with you is what happens during a flat. You get a flat tire and you start running down the road with it, and let's say it's on the rear and you don't notice you have a flat. What'll happen is it'll get so hot that those polyester cords that are in the sidewall mm-hmm. will actually melt.
Okay.
And when that melts, the tread in a single ring will actually pop off the tire. So when you see when you're driving down the road, not an alligator, but
okay.
a ring. You
okay.
see a complete ring sitting there.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Okay.
And all you have left is the sidewalls on the rim.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, but I have a Harbor Freight temperature gun. And I want to know when we come back what I always gun the shoulder of the tire where the tread meets the sidewall.
Right.
I have in my mind what the number is, I think. but I can tell you, I don't know. I don't check inflation anymore.
Okay.
I don't.
All right.
You know who does my tires?
Who?
My wife.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
My wife gets out when we're hauling horses or
mm-hmm.
tractors.
Right.
She gets out with her temperature gun that has a little laser button on it.
Right.
And she hits every tire at 6 to 8 inches away,
mm-hmm.
right on the crown, right on the corner. And we're looking for continuity.
Sure. You're looking for a temperature that you know corresponds to proper operation of the tire.
Right.
Right.
And so we don't do the air gauge anymore, and she doesn't have to have her fingernails done that often. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about cars. I'm Mark Sabin. We'll see you there. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and our tire expert this hour is John Dawes. John has made tires, designed tires, and then he's damaged them to test them. I'm sure you've damaged your fair share.
Oh, yes, I have.
Who's damaged more, you or your wife?
Oh, me, for sure.
See, my wife would do this right now. She'd say, that's out of bounds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Now, picture 38th Avenue and Indian School. I want you to draw a square with me. We're going to go up to Camelback south to the I-10, the I-17 on the east to the 101 on the west. That's Larry Harker's area. He handles that area like nobody else. He's a family-owned operation. Him and his wife, Ellen, work there. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is a trusted name for quality, affordable automotive service, maintenance. So if you live anywhere between Camelback I-10, the I-17 to the east, the 101 to the west, then I think if you don't have a good auto repair shop already, please look at Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Okay, what we were talking about temperature.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you how come this is we're learning. We go down to Tucson the other day with a bunch of horses. We're heading towards the New Mexico, and Renee goes, and this is 5 o'clock in the afternoon. She says, all the right side tires are hotter than the left side tires. Why?
Were you stopped and sitting in the sun?
No.
No.
But we had traveled in the sun from Phoenix to Tucson, and the sun was on our right.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
And so it took us a few minutes to figure that out. So, okay, we're okay with that. We're okay with that. Now, I like it because if I'm driving and the front two tires on the horse trailer are 30 degrees hotter than the back two tires, I need to move a couple of them fat horses backwards.
Yep.
I need to get them off that front axle.
Yep.
And I'll tell you something else. Every tire that I've ever seen blow on a horse trailer, and cowboys never check their tires, okay? We just carry spares. There's no reason to have a gauge. They've all blown up because of heat, because when you get out to take it off, you can't touch the tire. You can't. It's like a red piece of iron burning there. And so I think the answer is that if you get close to 200, 190 to 200 on the shoulder, you're in big trouble, and I'll tell you why. Because I've seen the motorhome tires, the tractor tires, I've seen the trailer tires hauling a backhoe. I've seen most of those steel-belted radials. Sometimes they'll get up to 150, 160. And that's on a hot day, but I'm scared of 200. Do I need to be scared of 200?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
And the reason is the melting point of polyester is not much more than 200. It's 220 or 230 degrees.
Okay.
Okay, so you start getting to the range where the tire starts to expand pretty dramatically.
Okay.
But the a normal operating temperature of 140 or 150 degrees on a radial is pretty normal.
It's just right in their sweet spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that's what I told Renee. I'm only interested in wide discrepancies. Okay, so if you go to the back dually of my dually truck, and three of the four rear tires are 110, and one of them is 160. That tells me clearly I've got an inflation problem, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And then at that point, I can deal with it.
Yes,
because... But the temperature gun is the key.
Well, that's a quick way of seeing whether something's different or not.
Yeah.
But I would submit to you that you really need to have some experience about what your tires are going to operate at when they're properly inflated and properly loaded.
You're right. You're right. The trailer runs 30 degrees cooler with empty.
Yeah, but okay. you can't... look at the temperature and say, take your brand new temperature gun out and go shoot the tire and say, that's too hot. You have to have some experience about what pressure, what pressure do you have, what load do you have, things like that, so that you get so you know what that tire runs, because tire brands run different temperatures.
Okay.
You change the tire brand, you're going to get a different kind of temperature.
But I'm only looking for a one that's outside the circle.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And now, should I run my trailer tires... If they're 80-pound tires, should I run them at 60, which is what the trailer said, or should I run them at 80 for the tire? And it's the same way with my mother's car, my dad's car, all the cars that I deal with. What should I run them at? Should I run them at what the door sticker says? Should I run them at the tire says? What does your wife run her tires at?
Well, I set the pressure in my wife's car.
Okay.
Okay, but I set it at the door placard.
Okay.
Whatever the placard says, if you're running the standard size tire for the vehicle, that's the pressure you should run, because that's the one the vehicle manufacturer said is optimum for ride and handling, cornering, all that kind of stuff.
Load.
Everything.
Okay.
They always have some built-in margin. So you're not running the minimum pressure you can have.
Okay, but a Suburban might call for 38 in the back tires, and it can haul 1 to 8 people. So that 38 is good from 1 to 8 people?
Yes, it is.
But the tire shows a 45 max. If I go to 45 max with 8 people in it, am I going to hurt myself?
No, you're not going to hurt yourself. You're just going to wear the tire out really fast in the center.
Okay, but I'm only going to go down to Karchner Cavern with a whole bunch of people, and I don't want to change the tire, and I want the best fuel economy. Why can't I go to the maximum inflation?
Well, you certainly can, but you risk, you're going to wear the tire faster, and you're going to change the handling of the vehicle. It's not going to handle the way...
It's not going to ride,
It's not going to ride right,
okay.
And the handling of it's going to be different.
Okay, but I'm willing to sacrifice that, because are you talking 10% loss in tread by overinflating the tire and wearing the center out?
Well, I think that depends on the tire, but you can dramatically change the amount of life you'll get out of that tire.
All right. Because, see, I like the idea, number one, a fully inflated tire is going to run cooler, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. In Arizona, I like that. You may not like that, but I like that. Number two, and a fully inflated tire is got a slightly smaller risk associated with punctures of curb hits and stuff on the road.
Wrong.
It's fully inflated. It's
fully
harder.
Inflated, so it's harder.
Okay.
And because it's harder, it doesn't give in the tire business, we call that enveloping power, or the ability of the tire to wrap itself around something on the road and not be damaged by it.
Okay.
So if you inflate the tire beyond the pressure recommended for the vehicle, the tire's then very hard. And so things that would normally be wrapped around by the tire now damage it.
Okay. So what about kissing curbs downtown Phoenix?
Well, again, the harder the tire is, the more likely you are to peel that sidewall rubber off.
But a lot of the curb hits are where the rim cuts the sidewall, and if I inflate it higher, don't I avoid the cutting of the sidewall?
Well, that would help, yeah.
Okay, okay. I knew I'd get a yes out of you sooner or later.
You sound like a lawyer.
I know. I thought I had it all handled. Okay, nitrogen. I know you want to talk about nitrogen. Let me just tell you what I think. I see ads for nitrogen that says that you're going to spend $10,000 for this machine, but if you charge everybody X amount of dollars, you can sell 30 of these a day, and the ROI, the return on investment of this machine, is 2 months max. Then at that point, 100% of the profits go into your pocket. This machine doesn't make anything more than 95% raw nitrogen. And in my hand, let me round off the number, it's 80, 79 or 80. So then we can't suck all the nitrogen out of the tire. We can't flatten the tire like a pancake. So and I have a nitrogen tester, and I've been testing everything with a green plug, and I've never seen anything that's outside the realm of about 85 to 88. That's all. Now, I say nitrogen is a ripoff. I say that the moisture inside the tire is a BS reason to do it. Nobody out there drives NASCAR 200 miles an hour, and nobody's car weighs 25 million tons like an airplane and lands with, 400 people on it. Except some of the cowboys.
All right, let me take a couple of these points. First, the cost. I agree with you. The cost is way out of bounds. These machines, if you had a 3 or 4 year payback, nitrogen should be something that's, a couple of bucks for four tires, five or $10 or nothing. It ought to be free.
There's a lot of dealers that do it for free, and I applaud them.
Absolutely. Okay. As far as maintaining your inflation pressure, that's the big one that they usually push as a sales.
You don't need to check it because it leaks less.
Right. And in fact, the math says it leaks about 30% less.
Okay.
But a tire will basically leak 1 to 3% per month. So if you take that 2% kind of in the middle on a 30 PSI tire, what's that, 0.6 PSI in a month?
That's a half a pound.
And 30% of that is 0.16 PSI.
Okay.
You're never going to see the difference between 0.48 and 0.6. Nobody will ever notice it.
In a year's period of time,
nobody's going to notice it.
Are you sure of those numbers?
I'm positive.
All right.
Those numbers. Okay.
Just kidding.
And then, but where nitrogen really has a benefit is reducing the amount of oxygen that goes into your tire. And oxygen is the thing that degrades the rubber products in the tire, that aging issue we keep hearing about.
Okay.
And the hotter the climate where you live, the faster that process occurs. Okay. That being said, if you wear your tires out in 5 years or less, nitrogen really isn't doing anything for
you. Who doesn't?
Well, lots of people don't.
Okay.
Lots of people don't.
Mrs. Jones from Ahwatukee and some Sun City people, they probably don't. But really,
but
if you buy
an 80,000-mile tire
and
you drive 10,000 miles a year, that tire is very likely to last you 8 years.
Now, raise your right hand and tell me that an 80,000-pound tire is truly going to give me 80,000 miles.
It does for some people. Me, I've got a little bit of a lead foot, and that doesn't work so well for me.
I've never seen.
If you rotate your tires and you maintain your air pressure, if your tires last longer, take your spare tire.
Okay.
Take the spare tire you lug around, came new in your truck.
Right.
And you it's now 10 years old or whatever. That tire should have been inflated with nitrogen.
Okay,
because you if you take that tire that's 10 or 15 years old and you put it on the ground and try to drive long distances with it, the aging issue becomes really critical.
But your industry is telling us to throw tires away after 5 years because they have a born-on date with them, and now we're going to expire them like old donuts.
Wait a minute. Not the tire industry, okay? I don't necessarily consider the tire industry my industry.
Okay.
But we got two camps in here. We got the vehicle manufacturers who are concerned about liability and so on. And their issue is if it's over 6 years old, get rid of it.
Okay.
The tire industry, who has to deal with trying to supply tires and deal with a supply chain and so on, is saying 10 years.
Okay.
All right.
But let's talk about RVs.
5 years. Where the tire is just sitting there.
Yeah. Does it age in my driveway?
Yes, it does.
Okay, does it age in my garage?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
aging begins when the tire's inflated.
Okay.
And it continues no matter what happens to it until it's deflated.
Okay.
Okay, so aging is a function of the oxygen being pushed into the tire from the high-pressure area inside.
Okay.
Okay, now, that being said, you still have ozone attack from the outside. So if it's in your garage, you don't have the ozone attacking the outside of the tire.
Okay. Okay.
Or if you have covers on your tires, you don't have the ozone attacking the outside. But the aging of the inside and the rubber around the steel belts, which is really the critical area of the tire, goes on as long as the tire's inflated.
Do you love your wife?
I do.
Okay. So if your wife has tires that are 5-6 years old and still have a third of the tread left on them, are you going to pull them?
Yeah.
Did my son talk to you?
No.
I took my motorhome on a trip not so long ago. I went to Texas looking at some horses. And he says, Dad, he says, those tires on the back end are 8 years old. I said, son, I don't care. They're Michelins. I use Michelins. I don't care. Just outside El Paso, boom!
Yeah. Well, I have tires that are on my truck that are now 7 years old. Okay. And
you're going to keep them.
I'm thinking very seriously. I've always had nitrogen in them.
Okay.
I'm very seriously considering getting rid of them, even though they probably still have half the tread.
I am convinced this whole thing is driven by the tire manufacturers who want to sell more tires. Because do the people in Minnesota, North Dakota, and then on the north have the same problems with tires aging as we do in Arizona?
Absolutely not.
How are we going to draw those lines? I'm not asking you to defend that industry.
Tire industry, you know, tire aging really is a southern United States kind of phenomenon.
I-10 corridor.
Well, I divide the United States kind of into three pieces.
Okay.
If you're south of I-40,
okay,
aging is an issue.
Okay.
If you're between I-40 and I-80 in the United States, you know, your tires last a long, long time. You're one of those people that has them last a long time. Okay. You might consider it. And if you're above I-40, it probably doesn't do anything for you.
I-80. If you're above
I-80.
I-80.
Okay. Yes,
right.
I-80.
I get that. Yeah. I get that. All right. Well, we didn't cover everything I wanted to cover, but we got to argue a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking, you know, my wife said, you should have done what Alan said. Well, when I get home, there's four brand new Michelins sitting there. And I said, go ahead and mount them and balance them. I don't care. And we put the spare on, and I had a good spare. But nitrogen for the money doesn't work for me. I'm not going to air up my spare, and I'm not going to take them off at 5,000 miles until I'm older and I need a AAA card.
Five years, right? Not 5,000 miles.
Yeah, 5 years. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I'm watching my tires carefully, and really and truly, in my entire life, the only blowouts I've ever had is a G159 four or five times a Goodyear. I will not put a Goodyear tire on a motorhome. I don't care who says otherwise. I will send you out the door if you want a Goodyear tire. I am done with them. But that's the only tire has ever blown on me except this Michelin, and they've all been motorhome related. Mm-hmm. All of them. Yeah. I've never had one on my red truck or any of the rest of them. No, my wife can't say that. But anyway, thank you, John Dawes. For the rest of you, we're going to talk about cars this next hour, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you got a car question, now's the time, 608-602-508-0960.